I'm Laura Lex, and you are listening to The Comedy Club on Radio 4 Extra and BBC Sounds. This week, my guest is the co-creator of Red Dwarf. I am joined by none other than the fantastic Doug Naylor. Hello, Doug.
Hi, Laura. It's great to be here.
Good. I'm really glad. How are you? Are you well?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. And you're here because you've written a book.
I have written a book, yes.
You sound
yes.
quite no, shocked
no.
that you did
I've written
it.
A few books, but I've just written a new book, yes. So, yes, this is a children's book.
Yeah.
It's called Sinbin Island.
Is this the first thing you've done for children?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you find it a very different experience, or did you sort of keep the same mindset?
Yeah, people have asked that a lot. I think it is very much the same mindset,
yeah.
I find. Because I didn't pander, and it's not the sort of book where it's mostly pictures and rude jokes. So it is kind of like, I think, I hope, a proper novel. With a proper story, proper characters, revelations, secrets, all sorts. So in many ways, it was quite similar to writing a Red Dwarf novel.
I was thinking that because it's you don't want to patronise them just because they're kids, do
no,
you?
No. No, absolutely not. I was trying to write the book I couldn't find as a kid.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because when I finished it, Craig asked to read it. And I hadn't told him that.
Craig from Red Dwarf,
Craig,
we should
Craig
say.
Charles, yeah. From a lot of places, actually, yeah, Six Music and all sorts. And he said exactly what I'd tried to do, which was, this is the book I couldn't find as a kid.
What exactly was it you couldn't find then? Which aspects did you want to push harder on?
Something that was genuinely funny, something that had epic adventure, something that where the kids are three-dimensional and have secrets and flaws, and are more realistic people, I think, than just being, this is the hero, this is who's,
yeah.
you know, whatever. Has
flaws is really interesting, because I think that is what kids' writing is often lacking, isn't it? They want,
yeah.
I guess because they want you to identify with the characters, they don't want to flaw them in case you then don't like them?
I think, well, it's interesting, yeah. I heard quite a few stories that kids prefer the baddies.
Ah.
Because they have a kind of redemption arc, a lot of them, and then become kind of good people at the end and don't like the heroes and heroines because they're kind of just nice.
It's the Superman problem a bit,
yes.
isn't it?
Yeah.
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 Okay. That's yeah. so fun. So give us a quick rundown. It's better coming from you. I could truncate
sure.
it, but it'll be a bit
botched. It's basically set in an orphanage for wayward boys and girls, where at the end of each school year, the four worst-behaved kids are banished to Sinbin Island, which formerly was used by smugglers to ferry treasure, including magical artifacts, to the mainland. And there's rumours of secret tunnels, hidden tunnels, but they have to survive there with just bread and water and, you know,
yeah.
Look for tunnels.
So with fantasy, if you were explaining it to me, an idiot, what would you say are the main differences in the rules of writing fantasy as compared to sci-fi?
Well, good science fiction is generally supposed to be to do with real science.
Okay.
That's the hardcore, proper science fiction. I mean, it doesn't mean you can't do that, that you have to do that, but that's generally what science fiction is about. Fantasy, of course, you can do anything. However, there are a great many similarities. So there is a thing called soft magic and hard magic. And the best kind of magic is hard magic, whereas soft magic, you wave whatever, magic wand, whatever, and that fixes everything.
Yeah.
Which, in terms of resolving plots, is a huge cheat. So you don't want that. Hard magic sets out a set of rules which you have to apply. And once you've given the reader the rules, you then have to kind of fix it so
yeah.
they don't see the denouement coming.
Do you read a lot of adult fantasy?
No. I mean, I've read some, but this was just something I got the idea. I thought it would be a fun thing to do. It started off, actually, as I've mentioned before, it was going to be about, I'd written a TV series about two kids who witness a flying saucer crashing. Go into the flying saucer, the flying saucer takes off, it crashes, and they get taken into Area 51,
oh.
Where they're mistaken as aliens, and then the adventure ensues. So I started off life thinking that was a book I was going to write.
Right.
So I thought, where can the flying saucer crash? I thought, an orphanage, kids' books love orphans.
they because, do, don't
because
they?
There are no parents and you don't have to go home nights and they live together. So I totally get that. And also, I kind of went to a boarding school, although I was a day boy, and there were a lot of eccentric teachers, so I could feed off that. So I thought, okay, an orphanage, but no, there'd still people would witness this flying saucer crushing. I know the worst four behaved kids can be banished to this island where the saucer can crash. So off I went, started to write it, and mentioned to my son what I was doing. And he said, forget the UFO, you don't need that. Make it the island, and if it's about smugglers and hidden tunnels and all that stuff, said if I was, you know, young again, I would love to read that kind of book.
Yeah.
And he was right.
I mean, I would read it now as an adult.
Right. This so many. So many adults have read it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, it's quite extraordinary, really.
I'm loving this. We're going to pause it just for a day or two, but will you come back in a couple of days so I can pick your brains further, please?
I certainly will.
Thank you very much. It's Doug Naylor. It's me, Laura Lex, on the Comedy Club, on Radio 4 Extra and on BBC Sounds. And I'm joined again today by my lovely guest. You might have heard us chatting a few days ago. It's Doug Naylor.
Hi, Laura. Great to be back.
Thanks for coming back. I have a question, because you're best known for Red Dwarf. You co-created and wrote on every single episode of Red Dwarf.
Yes.
Yeah. So here's my question in terms of switching it up to, which I know you've written Red Dwarf books before, haven't you?
Yes.
But do you love the freedom of books for their absolute lack of set budget and limitations on what you can do? Or do you think that makes it harder to not have boundaries?
Well, Rob Grant and I had written the first two series of Red Dwarf and we wanted to write a Red Dwarf novel. And not everyone thought we could. In fact, we did go to the BBC and say, can we write a Red Dwarf novel? And we went, no, do us a comedy book with lots of pictures and, you know, spaceships and things. And we went, no, we want to write a novel. And we wound up with Penguin in the end, who didn't know any better and thought we could do it. And it was great. And even today, people are bringing up the first two Red Dwarf novels and asking me to sign them. It's a different world. There's no budget limit. The character stuff, I think, is just as good as it was in the TV series. So it's very freeing. It's a wonderful thing to do. So I really enjoy that. It's slightly different when you write them on your own. I wrote Last Human, Red Dwarf, Last Human on my own. And obviously I wrote Simbin Island on my own. So you're basically locked away in a room for a long time by yourself. No one's read anything until you come out with it. And you're slightly trepidatious thinking, if they hate this, I've wasted so much time.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
My wife actually told some great nephew and great niece while I was still kind of tootling around. And she said, oh, Doug's writing a children's book. And they went, oh, are you great? What's it about? And I thought, oh, no, don't say that, because I've now got to pitch it to them.
Yeah.
And if they just go, oh, that sounds a bit... Yeah. But anyway, they were really positive. So then I thought, I've got to finish this now, because they used to say, how's the book going? Have you finished it yet?
Yeah.
So that kind of powered me through.
Did you have any big blocks with the plot for Simbin Island that you wished you had a co-writer or anything, or was it did it flow quite easy?
No, my days of working with co-writers is...
Oh, you love being on... Yeah.
Well,
I don't know how you ever do it. I'm such a solo creature, the thought of having somebody else in the creative process.
When I worked with Rob, we had a lot of very, very happy times.
Yeah.
And then he wanted to go off and do his own thing, and fair enough, he did. But then it makes you a bit twitchy. You don't want to... Because it is kind of like a divorce.
Yeah.
And you don't want to go through that again. And then you think, well... If you can do it on your own, because you won't divorce yourself. So, yeah.
You must get so bored of talking about Red Dwarf. Do you, or do you still?
When I meet the fans and I see, you don't get bored of the absolute love they have for it and how it helped them in really often in really difficult times, in sad times. And you think, gosh, you don't think of that as you write it or make it or any point really until they say it. But it's such a consistent story with people who meet you.
Yeah.
So I don't get bored of that. It just makes me feel very humble and, you know, grateful that, you know, they love it so much. Yeah, there's a limited number of stories I can tell you about Red Wolf, and I've forgotten probably 90% of them. So I'm just off a teeny weeny percentage. Yeah.
Is it nice to have something then like Simbin Island that's such a fresh project?
I love doing it. It was an absolute blast. And also, your characters become kind of collaborators, which is really strange. I mean, there's a whole thing about one of the characters, a girl, 13-year-old girl called Cav, and she's got this terrible secret, and we don't know what it is, including me as I was writing it. I just knew it'd be a really cool, terrible secret. And at one point, the hero, Diggs, asks her secret, and I found myself writing, basically, I'm not really comfortable talking about that now. And it was like, oh, right, okay, I respect that. And then we eventually have a campfire scene where she reveals the secret. And it was like she was telling me her secret. It was the most bizarre thing.
I'm so relieved to hear you say that, because I always thought that, like, proper writers had the whole thing planned out on a corkboard behind them. So to hear, like, an actual comic legend go, no, the characters told me, because that's how I felt when I was writing.
Right. Well, it's interesting you should say that, because I was talking to Frank Cottrell Boyce, you know, the children's warrior. And we were also discussing Stephen King, and he does exactly the same thing. He knows roughly where he's going, and then he writes. And Stephen King says, if you know the last line of the book and everything's all mapped up, what's the point in writing it? There's no journey, there's no joy. Yeah. You're just bashing out words.
Do you see things quite filmically in your head?
Oh, this is, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the things people say about Simbin. It's screaming to be made into a film or a TV series.
Yeah, I did like your descriptions. Is it Eyes the Colour of the Cookie Monster?
Yes.
Really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I've got, again, I said this at the end of last time, you're fantastic to talk to. Can I lure you back to my weird little studio for one more chat this week?
You absolutely can.
Lovely. Please join me again. And if you've been enjoying this chat and you've suddenly got a taste for either Simbin Island, it's available to buy now, or you want to watch some Red Dwarf, there's a lot of Red Dwarf on iPlayer, just saying. It's sitting there waiting for you. Thanks, Doug Naylor. I'll see you on Friday.
See you Friday. I'll cancel my plans.
For Jasper Carrot, he's now written Simbin Island. Hello, Doug.
Hi, Laura. Great to be back.
Thank you for coming back. You've written for just every format, really, haven't you? Is there a type of writing that you like most, or do you like the variety of doing a lot of different stuff?
I like the variety. I mean, the great thing about writing TV scripts is you get to meet the cast and you get out.
Okay.
And that's, you know, with Red Dwarf, that's always such fun. Back in the day, writing Spitting Image, you didn't really meet the cast because we wrote the scripts down in what was then a deserted Canary Wharf, which was just a big windy wharf with a big warehouse. And then it was made in Birmingham. So that was, you didn't really get the benefits and the laughs and the camaraderie you do. But one of the things I think about Red Dwarf is the cast, you know, quite rightly think we have written the characters and made them.
Yeah.
And we certainly lean towards all of them just by being around. So there's a huge advantage. When we first started Red Dwarf, writers weren't really allowed in rehearsals. It was sort of, oh, that means you're just going to be whinging every time we want to change anything, or you'll be fighting for the gags. And we weren't like that at all. We went, no, please just let us be there, because we will want to rewrite it when we hear it.
Yeah.
And we'll have time to do it if we're hanging around rehearsals. But we're also kind of feeding off, you know, their comedy vibe and what they could do. So Danny can ride a unicycle. Oh, we've got to write that in. You know, we learn bits and pieces about the different cast members.
What do you think of the landscape at the moment in terms of TV writing?
I think it's such a shame, because there's this myth that, the thing is, it's worth spending more money on dramas because dramas last. And it's simply not true. The biggest hit comedies outrate everything. Morecambe and Wise, Fools and Horses, The Office, all those shows. Red Dwarf is the biggest rated show ever on BBC Two and on UK TV.
Yeah.
And so it's like, put some money in them.
Yeah.
You know, where's the next generation? Because you've got to learn, you know, the next generation of comedy writers have got to learn. And they'll make mistakes, but you support them, keep going, and you'll get big hits.
I think that's the problem now, isn't it? Is if your first series isn't a smasher, you're whipped off and, oh, sorry about that, that was embarrassing. And it's like, no, let it sit. It's somebody's favourite sitcom, even if it's not a smash.
But also, it takes time for the writers to work out, and everyone, but the other people as well, to work out what's working, what's not working.
Yeah.
As a commissioner, I think you've got to have been involved in proper hit comedies.
Mm.
So you know, you understand how they come about.
Yeah.
Whereas coming in from the other side, more the executive side, I think you don't quite understand that. And it helps if you've got those kind of comedy chops and you understand the process. And then, because you need someone in your corner fighting, you know, just give us a break, give us a second chance, we'll get this right. I mean, Rob and I, sorry, refused for the first series to be put out in VHS. We didn't want it via, and actually the BBC gloriously went, okay, guys, if you're not happy, we said, no,
we
can do a much better series than that. Let us get series 2 and 3 and it will get better, we promise. And then series 1, as a byproduct of us going, no, don't release it, became this huge cult and outsold everything.
So your newest thing is Sinbin Island, which is your new book for children. But also, I'm not ashamed to say, fine for adults. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And then you've already got a second one on the cards?
Yes, I'm sort of 2/3 the way through the second one. There's going to be another one after
that. Do you find it a weird brain schism to be out promoting this one and to have the second one bubbling away? Or do you quite like sort of... Does talking about this one help with the creative parts of the next one, or do you have to be really good at compartmentalising?
I'm not. The feedback's been just insanely good. So it's been quite easy. So no one's coming up going, oh, you made a mistake there.
Yeah.
Why did you do that? That was just didn't work at all. So no one's saying that.
Yeah.
I would hate that if I'm in the middle and I'd be, oh, I'll have to change this, I'll have to change that. But it's always slightly shocking as well when we sign the books and things, is when you see the kids, because it's always like, oh my God, you're so young.
Yeah.
Because in my brain, I don't really picture kids as, you know, the readers. I just written this book. So it's strange.
That must be, because I found, not to keep harping on about my books, but I really... I'm so used to stand-up. I've done stand-up for 15 years. So I tell a joke and I see if you like it right then and there.
Yes.
Sitting about and waiting for feedback or a response. And there's something so... Well, what's wonderful about books is that you just curl up under your own duvet and read it in your own world. But as a writer, you're like, but could you stop reading and let me know what you thought of it? Do you... That must be the best bit, the kids coming up and clutching their copies.
Yes.
And...
No, it's lovely. And especially when you get... And I got one yesterday and signed it and it was sort of quite well thumbed.
Oh.
And it's like, what page are you on? 101.
Oh.
Are you enjoying it? Yeah. So that was great.
Because you remember, I remember that a book called Go Saddle the Sea that was the first book that I like ripped through.
Right.
And like, it's funny sitting opposite you because things like Red Dwarf, I was chatting to Stu, the producer, before you got here about how... Red Dwarf was on just past my bedtime, but it was on after Challenge Annika.
Yes.
And if I had my pyjamas on and had brushed my teeth already, I was allowed to watch it in mum and dad's bed. And so you're doing it again for, like, I'll be 40 next year, but now you're getting another generation of us that are just going to love what you've put in the world. And it's a beautiful legacy.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for coming in and joining me this week. I'm a huge fan, and I cannot wait to read this and then give my nephew a secondhand copy for Christmas.
Brilliant idea.
On budget. I have been chatting to Doug Naylor all of this week. If you want to watch some Red Dwarf, head to iPlayer where you can watch it. Sinbin Island is out now. Thank you so much, Doug Naylor, for coming in.
Thanks so much, Laura.